we get going. So, welcome everybody. So, welcome to this meeting of the Scrutiny Commission for Charnwood Borough Council. There are a number of things I would like to remind people of before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following the meeting. Under the openness of local government bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the meeting, disrupt the business of the meeting, sorry. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, please I ask everyone to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent and ensure that your environment is distraction free. Thank you. Just a quick one on housekeeping for me. If I can just remind members just to be respectful in the language that we use when we're discussing the reports, and also to be respectful of the officers and also each other during the discussions that we have, and just direct all questions through the chair. So this meeting of Scrutiny Commission is being held as a hybrid meeting with some meeting participants joining the meeting virtually. I will now ask those members if they can see and hear the meeting. So online we've got Councillor Hamilton, so Deputy Leader of the Council and Lead Member for Public and Private Sector Housing. Councillor Hamilton, can you see and hear us?
I can confirm that I can both see and hear the meeting.
Thank you. We've got Katie Moore, Head of Strategic Housing.
Yes, I can see and hear. Thank you.
Thank you. And we've got Matt Bradford, Head of Contracts, Leisure, Waste and Environment.
Thank you, Chair. I can see and hear proceedings.
That's lovely. Thank you. So, if we proceed with the meeting. So, if you go move to item one, apologies. Have we got apologies, Sally?
Yes, Chair. We've got apologies from Councillor Beverly Gray, and there is no substitute, unfortunately.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. Item two, so we've got minutes of the previous meeting. Can everyone confirm if you're happy for the minutes from the previous meeting? Yeah. Brenda?
Yeah, oh, sorry.
Yep, lovely, thank you. That's that one done. Item three, so disclosure of pecuniary interests and other registrable and non-registrable interests. Have we got any this evening? No? And item four, declarations of the party whip. Are there any declarations? Guessing not, but we'll just check. No, lovely, thank you. Item five is questions under scrutiny committee procedures 11.16. We've not had any questions submitted this evening. And item six, pre-decision scrutiny of any specific financial matters to be considered by Cabinet. There aren't any this evening. So we'll move to item seven. So Cabinet items for pre-decision scrutiny. And the following items have been identified for pre-decision scrutiny from the Cabinet agenda for the 11th of January 2024. So item 7A is the Corporate Strategy 2024-2028. I believe we've got Rob Mitchell, Helen Gretton and the leader, Councillor Mia, with us for this one. Do you want to introduce it for us, Rob?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I will do, although I'll more or less immediately hand over to Helen, who's going to take some of the detail. But just to say, obviously, the report has been put together after quite a lot of work to get us to this point. It's part of a suite of corporate documents, but will set the strategy and direction for the organisation over the next 4 years. I don't know if the leader wants to say anything prior to Helen into a bit more detail.
Just to say that we have worked on it over the last, well, 5 months, mm-hmm. 6 mm-hmm. months. So there's been a lot of work happening in the background to get it as, to this stage, as they say. But we'd be happy to hear scrutiny's thoughts.
Thank you.
Just finally, the current corporate strategy runs to the end of March 2024. So as the leader said, we have been working on developing a new one for the past, probably about the past 6 months. We've undertaken quite an extensive amount of consultation, both with residents and with officers, and obviously with the Labour group and other groups. We've developed the themes which are outlined at Appendix 1. It is the intention that we'll present this to Cabinet on Thursday. Associated with this document will be a more detailed corporate delivery plan. So the corporate strategy is quite high level, it's intended to be quite high level, but there will be more granular detail in the corporate delivery plan which will be presented to Cabinet in March. As we've outlined in the recommendations, we've asked for delegated authority to the leader and the chief executive for any final amendments and to design the document. So those of you that will be familiar with the current corporate strategy, it does have more of a design element to it, and we will be developing that as we go through to launch, which will be in April. Thank you. Happy to take it.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you. I've only got one very quick question, which was just in the efficient and effective council section. So obviously we're wanting to embrace technology, which I think is definitely the right way to go, and you're referring to maintaining the face-to-face. Just with regard to our telephone service now, I know previously we've had some issues with response times on the telephone. I just wondered where we were up to at the moment on that. Yeah. What our average sort of wait time is and what our target wait time is.
Yeah, so thank you for that, Chair. So as you recall, we did have some quite significant issues. I think we discussed them perhaps in scrutiny at the time. They were predominantly to do with shortages in staff, which was caused by a number of people leaving, but also the changeover with Harbour at the time in terms of the service that we had operated for them. We have got over that. We have recruited. There are still ups and downs in staff capacity, and obviously demand comes and goes depending on what's happening. So just to give you some very recent figures, I think we were inundated obviously Tuesday, Wednesday last week with calls, and you know, during the peak of that, I think the average wait time was about 6 minutes.
Okay.
So you know, we want to be at 2. That's where we try and get to, and that's more or less where we have been over the last few months. There are some times, you know, if somebody rings at lunchtime and we've got a bit of shortage or there's some demand, people might wait for 20 minutes or something like that, but on average we're in a pretty good place, and particularly if you compare that to any sort of utility or any other type of
public provider,
it's a lot better than where we were. And it's managed on through the day by the teams, and some of the staff that are currently working sort of downstairs practicing customers, if they're quiet and the phones are busy, they're pulled onto the phones and vice versa. So there's a bit of, you know, movement of resource depending on what the demand's like actually through the day to try and smooth out any peaks and troughs. And if we know we've got a particular peak, then they'll staff up for that as well. So I'm pretty comfortable with where we are now, particularly when you compare it to where we were before. Thanks. Yep. Chair.
Lovely. Thank you. Any other questions?
I think probably, thank you, Sharon. I think you may have answered. I sort of went through the corporate strategy as it is and the papers. I just wondered, it's really how we're going to do it. I presume that's going to be built into the strategic objectives going forward under the headers.
Yes, so
that's more important for me as how will we achieve what we're set out to achieve, because there's some big things in there, isn't there? So, you know, it would just be very interesting to see what the objectives are broken down to.
Obviously, this is a four-year strategy, so again, it goes back to the corporate delivery plan. So that will break it down into much more of a operational level in terms of what we're actually going to do to address these more higher level objectives. I don't know if you've got anything.
No, that's more or less exactly what I was going to say. So.
I look forward to that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
My question to you would be again on the staffing, and you've said that the problems in the past were created because of low staffing. Was that difficult to recruit, or was it just we weren't recruiting, or what was the problem there about filling those vacancies? And if this is a four-year strategy, what is the likelihood of that happening again, and what's put in place to avoid it?
Through you, Chair. So in that particular example where it was the customer service staff, it was a number of staff leaving at short-ish notice, and the changeover with the contract between ourselves and Harborough, which meant some staff tupied out. So we were carrying a number of vacancies, and at that time we did find it difficult to recruit, but actually that's now resolved and we're in a position where we are recruiting reasonably to those jobs. As you'll perhaps be aware from a previous report to, I think it was Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee recently, where we took a paper on workforce, we do have other areas of the organisation where we are at times struggling to recruit to roles, so particularly note planning, certain areas of housing. But it's not just those areas, there are others as well where we've been out to recruit and been unable to. So there's a range of things we're doing to try and improve our recruitment and retention of staff. And that report expansion performance scrutiny listed a whole range of those. So there's no guarantees that we will have a sort of consistently full establishment. We will have ups and downs, and we will still continue to rely on agency staff. But in those areas, we are trying to resolve particularly the shortages in permanent staff and get back to having a more settled and permanent set of staff in those areas. So it's a very, it will be a focus in that efficient and effective council strand, and there's a workforce group that's looking at it. So again, we could bring information back to finance, performance, or this committee.
I understand retention's a problem for any company at the moment, isn't it? Well, going forward. So you have leaving interviews, so do you intake all that information?
We have exit interviews, yes.
Yeah, so, okay.
Yeah, so we're trying to gather...
Have they identified a trend at all, or is it because of the availability of more jobs out there?
No.
So people can move?
No, we do collate that information, and we have had a real push on that, actually, and have changed the mechanism. In terms of the reasons for people leaving, it's very mixed. Mm. If it is identified, and I can't think of a particular scenario where it has been identified because it's a particular individual in the organisation, a particular manager or whatever, then obviously we would look into that. But it's generally increased opportunities, relocation, those are very much a mix
out of our hands.
Of our hands, absolutely. But if there was something, we would be looking to look for a solution.
Thank you.
Just to elaborate to that a little bit. So in areas like planning, for example, it's generally the competitiveness of the private sector pay that's taking people away. So there are some trends there, and even when they aren't leaving to go to the private sector per se, they're going to agencies, and then, you know, they're able to command a greater wage, and they can take work on or not take work on, so they've got a lot of flexibility at a greater salary rate. So, you know, it's similar in other parts of the public sector, social work and teaching and other things, where you've got quite a lot of agency staff these days. So it's something we're going to have to manage. It won't go away, but what we want to do is reduce the proportion that are agency staff and have more permanent staff. So in that example, we're doing a lot more to try and develop career graded posts where we bring people in at a more junior level, we train them, keep them. And they progress up the salary as they go in terms of their qualifications. We're doing quite a lot with the university and college now. I think, Helen, your team's got quite a lot going on with college and interns and trying to organise that across the council as well. So we're trying all sorts of different things to support retention and recruitment.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Thanks. Any other questions?
Okay, if we go to the recommendation then, can I see if everyone agrees with the recommendations in the report?
Yep,
lovely, that's great, thank you, all agreed.
Thank you.
Okay, so if we move to item 7B, we've got the declassification of properties designated for allocation to people aged over 45. So I believe we've got Councillor Hamilton online with us there, Peter Oliver's joining us, and we've got Katie Moore online as well. Councillor Hamilton, do you want to introduce it, or Peter, are you?
Councillor Hamilton, just do a brief introduction.
I can say a few quick words.
Of course.
Detail. An echo here on my side. This is an issue that's been, I think, around for some years now. I think going way back to consultation back in 2017, but it's really about removing the age restriction of 45 plus properties, of which there's a large proportion of our housing stock that has this restriction, something like 1,071 properties out of roughly 5,500. And the reason it's been removed is a number of things. One is to drive faster relet, but also there's compliance reasons as well, both to more closely aligned to our tenancy standard and also equalities legislation. And so you'll see the recommendations and the reasons outlined on page 27-28 of your document. We're aware that this might cause some initial concerns by current residents in these properties, so there's quite a detailed communication strategy being put in place to get the reasons for that, to listen to their concerns, and also there'll be additional resource put in place to manage any potential issues, so there'll be an extra ASB officer, for example. So as I say, this is essentially, I would say the main driver is really a compliance issue, but it will also help us kind of get people into our properties quicker. So it's an efficiency thing as well.
Thank you.
So Peter wants to give any more detail.
Thank you, Councillor Hamilton. Thank you, Chair. I'll just cover a few of the key points and provide a little bit of contextual information. That's 20% of the stock is currently classified, which is the 1,071. So I would emphasise it's a big, you know, big number currently. I suspect that in the past, when we had a bigger stock, it would have been less of, you know, it would have been less of a proportion. But now, you know, with certain rights buying things like that, it's shrunk. Moving on to, there's a chart at page 33 that shows stock composition. So we can see that most of the properties that we have that are 45 plus age designated are one bedroom properties. If we look at the location, most of them are located in Loughborough. There's a few in Syston as well. That chart shows the distribution. I would note, looking at the age of current tenants, 57% of current tenants in those properties are aged over 60. I do think that's a point worth noting. Although, that said, whilst these properties are designated for people that are aged over the over 45 years old, it doesn't mean they can't have family that are less than 45 living with them. And when we sell a property in it, on a leasehold basis, of course, the people that live in that property can be aged under 45 as well. Looking up on page 35, we did some analysis around our kind of void turnover and empty properties, looking at 5.2. Over the last three financial years, 1,154 properties became void, and higher proportions of the properties with a 45 age plus designation became void than properties with no age restriction. Moving on to 5.3, over the last three financial years, 907 void properties we relet, and it took us longer to relet those properties than those without an age designation. So it is the case that these properties are harder to let as well. Moving on to page 36, there's a point in the box just there. The data shows that there's a high need for these properties for people aged under 45. However, because that cohort cannot actually access those properties, we're not making best use of the housing stock. We looked at demand and bidding activity data, so about halfway down page 36. Over the last 3 years, 126 45 plus age designated homes have been advertised for our choice based letting scheme. On average, 3.5 bids were received for each available 45 plus property. And in contrast, when we look at one bedroom general needs flats that are accessible more more widely with no age restriction, we received an average of 14 bids per property. So we're really showing that there's, you know, there's a significant increased demand for general needs properties. As mentioned, we did do some consultation back in 2017 as part of the consultation for the housing allocations policy. You can see that there were 78% of people that responded were in favour of removing 45-year minimum age limits for general needs flats. I'd venture there were probably people there on the housing waiting list. Yeah. I would have thought it would, of course, be the, you know, would of course be the benefits. Tenants affected by declassification, if people did want to move and subject to other checks being undertaken, fall into band 2, high housing need under the council's housing allocations policy. I think certainly I would emphasise that the intention is that we don't want people aged over 45 to try and to move, and I would emphasise that it's likely to be a very gradual change as well, because as properties become relet, and also we recognise that, you know, there's some risks to manage as well, hence the proposed phased implementation. I would say that whilst popular with people on the housing register, I do not believe it will be popular with existing tenants. I would emphasise that point. Therefore, there's some very careful communications planned in, and emphasising the phased nature of the implementation as well. As stated, we also intend to introduce some additional resources in the tenancy estate management and ASB teams to allow for any increase in ASB or lifestyle issues which are likely to arise, I would venture, and so that they can be responded to.
Thank you. That was quite thorough. I imagine we've probably all got quite similar questions on this, but we'll see. My first question is, are we at risk of breaking equality laws if we don't action this? And how likely do we think that is? And what other local authorities have age restrictions currently, and do we know if they're looking to remove them as well? I think we start with that.
Okay. All right. I believe that we're at risk of challenge in respect of inequalities challenge. I'm 44. Why can I access that property? It's not, these properties don't have any additional features.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing in it,
and
isn't it?
Which make them particularly suitable for a particular. I know. I did have a look round. I couldn't get a kind of definitive picture around the sector. I think we're in an anomalous position as a local authority with such a huge proportion of 45 plus. I did find some housing associations that, and I emphasise the distinction there, some housing associations that look to apply certain criteria. But, I did discuss the position with our equalities officer, and the equalities officer explained, I also discussed the position with our enhanced legal services team as well around this point, that if you cannot bring up a proportionate justification, which is what the equalities action says, then you are at risk of challenge.
Okay. And would we consider keeping a small proportion of properties 45 plus, or are we looking to change every single one that we have classified as 45 plus?
The recommendation is that all of them are changed to this to the general needs category.
Is that because of the equalities issue?
Yes.
Okay.
Can I just ask a question for clarification? Yeah. So it's just the 45 plus ones, does that mean that we'll still have some stock that's 60 plus?
Yes.
That is more designed for an older tenant? Right, okay, thank you. I wasn't quite clear on that when you said that,
Just got one. Yeah. On the 60 plus, would we need, for the equalities thing, would we need to make sure that that 60 plus has got a valid reason for being 60 plus, such as modifications and stuff like that?
Through you, Chair. Yes, and that covers our sheltered accommodation and also our bungalow accommodation, which is arranged in a certain fashion, specifically designed for a specific group of people.
Yeah,
thank you, Chair. Peter, thank you very much for adding the properties which are available to the list that there was in the document. Can I just say that the report is really explicit. It's a really good report.
Yeah.
And really easy to read. It's quite a low number. Out of all of the properties that we have, we've only got 21, which are going to be available for the over 55. So we don't really have any quick wins there, do we? Because it's just a small number when you look at the larger percentage of the stock.
I'll respond. Yes, I don't believe this is the kind of panacea in respect of in respect of the issue that we have with empty properties. I presented to you there the properties that were vacant and available to let.
Right.
So there will be those ones that are just ready to go straight away. Sign people's.
Okay. So they're available. Would like to move in.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much,
Councillor Lenny.
I was going through on to page 35. With the voids, are we still having to catch up with a lot of the voids? And the ones that are people with no age restriction, do they tend to be released to new tenants without much being done to them? Because I'm going back to now my Shepherd's Flat days on Brook Street, where they didn't seem to, they seemed to empty, and then very little seemed to be done to fix them up suitable for a new tenant.
May I respond, Chair?
Of course, thank you.
Yeah, certainly. So we still do have a general issue with voids at the moment, and the Scrutiny Commission will receive an update in that respect coming forward. I don't believe that the position in respect of these properties, which is why we look back 3 years, has particularly been distorted kind of by the issue we've got with voids at the moment, which is why we looked over the data over such a long period. So I don't, and in terms of properties coming back in different conditions from different age category peoples, we've not done any analysis in that respect.
So they'd be treated with as much care, the upgrading or whatever needs improving, when they're treated the same as 45 plus and 60 plus?
Through you, Chair. Yes.
Thank you.
Councillor Seaton, I'm free.
Well, I think Peter knows which block of flats I need to talk about, but I'm not talking about them. It's just in general, when the age limit was taken off of flats in Thurmaston, it created a lot of problems. because the age was so mixed. It was plus 60, then it went to plus 45, and then it went to anybody. So, I mean, the ages in there were very varied, and it has caused problems. And obviously they're single person flats, bed sits, a lot of them, and not really nice accommodation either, the bed sits, are they? They're very small, very small, and you're living in where you're sleeping kind of thing. But it appeals to a certain section of the community that wants to move into to places like that, because you know, they've got no responsibilities, and I'm trying to avoid saying what I mean, and that's awful. So there's a lot of people in there that are drug addicts, they're alcoholics, and they're not mixing with the rest of the community there. So the community spirit, I think, gets lost when that balance is disturbed. So I just want to know, you said it will take careful management who you will put in, but do you manage it? Will you manage it? Or will you just put somebody in willy-nilly? Let's just before I let you answer that, because that one's sailed, that ship's gone.
I think what I will do is I'll just ask Katie Moore, the head of strategic housing, just to respond to that point, which relates to the council's allocations policy.
Because I'm thinking of Old Hall Close, that the ship hasn't sailed there, but it will do.
Yeah, Katie, so that, I don't know if you caught the question, which was whether or not I think we'd just move anybody in, or whether there would be management of that process. So I'd be grateful if you could just clarify how it is that the allocations policy works.
So the allocations policy works currently in that people only qualify for the housing register if they've got a confirmed housing need, and people are excluded from the housing register, or in some cases accepted but stopped from bidding for properties where they are unsuitable to be a tenant. So if they've got a history of serious ASV or serious criminal behaviour that we think makes them unsuitable to be a tenant, and they've not demonstrated a change in their behaviour that now makes them suitable. So we do have that provision built into the allocations policy anyway, to be able to sort of restrict allocations to people who can't manage their tenancy appropriately. We do have some sensitive letting processes as well. So for example, if somebody bids for a property and they are top of the shortlist, we do work with various different teams within housing to look at the suitability of that allocation. And so we consult with landlord services, so if they're aware that there's been a history of ASB in that particular property, or there's existing ASB within the block, we will look at whether the person that we're moving in is likely to also create ASB issues or be vulnerable to the impact of ASB issues before we confirm that placement. So there are some mechanisms built into the policy and the procedure to try to manage the lettings of void properties. I think, you know, most people, nearly everyone on the housing register will have some form of vulnerability, and they will all have a confirmed housing need. So we will only allocate to people that definitely need that housing. And alongside that, we will also make sure that they are suitable for that housing as well.
Thank you very much. I mean, that is my main argument. Make sure that they are suitable for that housing. And it just doesn't mean the four walls. It means the community it serves as well. And because it's... some of the blocks are quite big, some of them are small, so it's very easy to unbalance a community and make it hell for somebody who's living there.
I think the gist of kind of where we're getting to is that we understand that from the equalities perspective we kind of need to do this, but the management of how it's done I think is really key in this, and the additional resources for the ASB team is certainly necessary and will need to be monitored as to whether that's enough, and making sure that any issues that are brought forward are dealt with swiftly. I think that's my point of view, I think, on this. Anyone got any more comments on it?
More questions?
I think I would support exactly the same, Chair, as you say, because I think what's happened in the past, and it's nice to know or reassuring to know that it's changing, the allocation policy is leaning towards assessing each individual need, because I think what happened, people with, certainly in our village, with antisocial behaviour all seemed to get put in the same place, which wasn't really helping the neighbours who didn't choose to live like the, some of the neighbours were living. So I think it's vital that, you know, each person is assessed to the need and to the area they're placed, whatever age. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, I do have one more question about this extra resource that's coming in for the reasons that, you know, we've all said. So there's one additional ASBSR and one additional tenancy and estate management officer. So do you think that's enough? Basically, is the question, and also that it's a maximum of 3 years. And I just wondered why, how you kind of come to them that one of each was enough, and that 3 years would be long enough, essentially, and whether they are going to be in post for when this starts to roll out.
Yeah, yes, we did consider that, and I think that's why the recommendation is that we look to declassify from the summer of next year, because recruitment takes quite a long time, so we wanted to be sure that we have the resource in place.
Yeah.
Now, if you think about it, we've got 1,000 properties, so if we do 250 every 6 months, and again, it's really cautious approach, and actually, although you're declassifying 250 properties, you declassify them, but actually the change actually then happens over time, as you get tenancy turnover. So it's actually quite a phased implementation. I was quite cautious. I was kind of mindful of, you know, potential criticism. Well, you know, if you've got all these people on the housing register, why don't you declassify them now and make the best of it? But we've actually taken a really, I think, quite cautious approach by spreading it out over a couple of years and and monitoring it quite closely as well, you know, to make sure that, all right, are we ready for the next phase? Or have we got, you know, have we got a capacity issue that we need to address? So I think, yeah, we kind of, I think, thought about those concerns and reservations about it, and try to build in as much kind of risk mitigation as we can do over the implementation.
Because I do think, again, people will worry. So when you start communicating to tenants, they're going to worry, and I think they're going to probably be extra, you probably thought about this, extra sensitive to kind of things that might happen, perhaps more so than they would be normally, because they're kind of nervous about
there's an expectation already before an issue's happened. They're kind of almost like looking out for it.
So I think
what you've got to do is nudge your plant pot and you're out.
But yeah, so it's just, yeah, it's good to kind of like have some reassurance that there's going to be sort of something there for them to come back to either get some advice or some help, or again, reassurance,
or even having when the communication goes out, whether they can have a direct contact or a specific number that they're able to contact, rather than just going through the standard customer service.
Come on. I mean, would it be possible, or are you already planning to have sort of, you know how you already have these sort of like sort of tenancy network meetings that are around the borough every so often? Would it maybe be possible to maybe go out and do something specifically related to this for each, you know, area that's affecting, perhaps, like you said, so you've got somebody face to face, and again, not to stereotype, but sometimes the older residents are the ones that are less likely to be sort of, you know, contacting on the online forums or what have you, you know. And I think it's about having those human conversations with people. They're often better face to face. Is that something that could be considered, perhaps?
Yeah, we've got the Charnwood Housing Residents Forum, which has residents from across the are attending it, so I can take an item to the CHRF, and then I think in terms of the implementation, I think I'd anticipated, you know, putting, I guess, something specific for queries arising from it in terms of a workflow here. Probably run things through the contact centre and then end up with a specific queue for you know, a dedicated queue, so we can kind of monitor the inquiries that are coming in. That's kind of what I'd envisaged in doing it.
Yeah.
We have tenancy estate management officers and a tenancy support team as well that can, you know, that can do this, you know, that can do this work. We're actually quite well resourced in terms of tenancy support. So we've got a team leader, and we've got three tenancy support officers as well, which is a good, you know, good level of support. So I do think we've got some general capacity in there to respond to specific queries.
Yeah. I'm sorry, can I just ask one more question? Mainly out of curiosity, I was going to ask, I think you sort of answered it earlier on, about why it is we've got so many
properties that are age restricted. And I know you said some of it's around right to buy, but you did say we're kind of anomalous. So how did that happen, essentially?
Why are we not so many? I had a look back over through the cabinet reports over like the last 20 years or something, or 23 years, and I couldn't find anything specific.
Date,
so
yeah.
I spoke to a colleague who said that that back in the maybe like late 90s or something like that, the blocks were declassified because of some ASB issues and kind of that friction between communities. So therefore, I do think it will arise in the future, but I believe that's why it was done at that point in time. But I couldn't actually say with certainty because I just can't find a record of a decision. I had a really good look for it.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Any other questions or comments? No? Okay, if we just go for the recommendation, is everyone happy with the recommendation in the report? Lovely, that's great. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Katie, as well.
Thank you.
Okay, we move to item 7C. We've got Charnwood Grant Strategic Partners 2024-25 and 25-26. And I believe we've got Councillor Blackshaw here with us, Peter's staying, and we've got Verity Graham joining us as well. Councillor Blackshaw, do you want to introduce?
Very briefly,
thank you.
Thank you for having me here. It's been great to go out and meet all the different strategic partners. Thank you to Verity for facilitating that. You'll see that Syston Volunteer Centre decided not to apply for the grant this year, so this kind of sets out where the money from that bit is going. So I think I'm going to hand over to Peter at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A short introduction from me. So, subject to budget approvals and the main budget going through, this report provides a degree of short-term certainty, I believe, for organisations that are currently funded by the council as well. And these organisations are all currently funded by the council. As identified by the lead member, that nine and a half thousand allocation will go to Living Without Abuse, because the grants panel considered this and thought that was worth it to help reduce the waiting time for their clients to access support. So what we're seeing here is kind of an extension of the existing arrangements to give some certainty to those existing grant funding strategic partners.
Thank you. Verity, do you want to add anything?
Just to say that the Strategic Partner Programme has, for those that are new to it, has been running for a number of years, and it was the Council's commitment to very specific voluntary sector organisations to ensure that they had didn't have to constantly chase funding for things, and it gave them the security, because we really value and continue to value their support for meeting some of the areas of the corporate plan that we can't necessarily directly deliver on or provide a wider support. So the partners having that stability and knowing that they don't have to constantly be filling in application forms and doing presentations to us. But we do really tight monitoring and evaluation, and the strategic partners all have a special point of contact with the council who regularly meets with them. And as you'll have known from the pandemic and the recent cost of living, those organisations have really stood up for us and become really integral in our delivery and support of the communities. They've been able to access things and be up and running various things, including now currently the cost of living crisis. They all see that as part of their commitment through the strategic partner grants, that is their duty, responsibility and partnership with us. So I'm happy to take any questions if you've got any specifically.
Thank you. Yeah, Councillor Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Verity, can the Parkin Centre apply? Because I know they've been like, they really struggle. They're struggling for funding at the moment, and they do really work very close in partnership with us.
There are a huge number of organisations that would meet that criteria that we work with regularly. I think it's very specific, but also they have got a service level agreement with the council already through housing, and we are limited in our budget, and the budget has been scaled down over the years, so we've seen increments. So it would be at the cost of another organisation not being able to deliver against what we've set up in terms of agreement. So it would also, you'll see on the page in terms of the sort of on page 66, the chart shows all the things that they meet. So it's just trying to have quite a diverse contribution to the different things that they deliver as well, and that's led to that sort of their flexibility of meeting needs. So fully understand the Falcon question, thought it might come up, but there'll be others that would want that similar, and we do consistently get asked by other organisations. So again, it's something that sits with scrutiny cabinet, but on the whole there would be lots of people that would ask the same question.
Can I just ask a question? Have they applied then?
We haven't invited them to apply because they already get funding. The other thing just to say and highlight to you is that strategic partners are not, if they agree to the strategic partner grant, they cannot apply for any other grant policy through our Charnwood grants, so they can't apply for Charnwood community grants. They could apply for facilities because that's building and that's separate, not covered under the strategic partners. So it would restrict. So Fearon Hall, Falcon Centre, we've just given £3,500 to. And depending on what that could, they could apply again in the coming year, and they probably get equal to what they get through the strategic partner grant in some cases. And if more and more people became strategic partners, the pot would reduce in terms of its ability to deliver, I suppose. It weakens the amounts that people can do and reduces the service levels in some cases.
They do a great job, thank you.
They do, and we're fully supporting them in many other ways, and obviously through housing they are getting funding, and as I say, they've just had, I think it's about £3,800 to help with the drop-in centre. So and there's going to continue to be that demand. Shire grants have obviously been cut for next year, so there will be people that will have lost elements of this, but for the next 2 years the proposal is that these organisations come through.
Thank you Verity. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Would that explain the loss of Syston?
No, the loss of Syston was because they're doing transport, and their focus has remained on transport despite their trying to do wider service, and they just stepped back, and we don't fund transport.
No.
And it was sort of subsidising the transport, and they're very open and transparent. We've had really good decisions, and actually over the last 4 years we've been going backwards and forwards on that, but after very frank discussions with them, they recognised that they weren't utilising the money in delivering the voluntary sector element that the other John Storer House and Shepshed are doing. It's very much been transport related, which is really hugely light, but it's not for us to fund, if that makes sense, when they're already getting funding elsewhere. Mm-hmm. It does open them up to apply to us through the communities grant, so that's the other spin on it, that they can apply and potentially could get I'm not saying they will, but they could get £10,000 rather than £9,000.
Yeah.
But for things that they're doing very targeted. Mm-hmm. So they've been amazing. They continue to be a really positive partner, and it's a very amicable way forward, and they really help with the cost of living. So it was just a professional discussion and agreement. No. And fine.
That's fine. And I'm hoping that you will still support them suggest things, because this is all very Loughborough-centric, the grants that have been given out. And Syston Volunteer Centre covers a huge distance. I live in Thurmston, it's well placed for buses, but we're talking about the smaller villages around there. And Syston Volunteer, the transport, does a tremendous job in bringing the people together to Elizabeth Park.
Yeah.
The drummers meet there, and all sorts of community groups.
For reassurance, our money was never used for that. And whilst it did fund elements of the building, I suppose, it contributed.
Yeah.
I was reassured that it wouldn't have any detrimental impact. It would be a loss. But you know, that they still continue, they're really working really hard on the mental health side of things, and they're stepping up with that because they're dealing with a lot of those people through their work. And again, in the pandemic, they did befriending and all of those things. So it's sort of there, but not in the way that we, the robust process that we would needed from a strategic partner. But yes, very much to reassure you, continue to work with them, and great organisation, and they're doing a lot down there, and will continue.
Okay.
And again, can apply for funding.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you.
Any other questions?
No, they've been answered.
Yeah, mine were answered too, so that was great. A really good introduction there. Are we happy to go to a vote on recommendations?
Yes.
Is anyone happy with the recommendations in the report?
Yes.
Yep. Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we move to item 8. So we've got pre-decision scrutiny, the Cabinet response. So we've got Karen Widdowson to give an update on that for us.
Thank you, Chair. So since the meeting of the Commission in December, Cabinet considered the following items, which one was the exempt item on the regeneration perspective and the asset management strategy. In both instances, Cabinet adopted the officer recommendations and thanked the Commission for their pre-scrutiny. And this is in for noting this particular item. Thank you.
Thank you. So we move on to item 9. So we've got an update on scrutiny panels, again from Karen.
Thank you, Chair. So this is an update report on the various scrutiny panels underway. So the budget scrutiny panel, this met on the 3rd of January, and item 10 sets out the recommendations and observations of that panel, so that will be dealt with under that item. The public transport scrutiny panel, this first met on the 13th of December and will be meeting again on the 7th of February, and work is underway on that, and that's been supported by Sally, who's clerk and meeting tonight. The housing needs scrutiny panel, the scoping document has been drafted, however it's not available for tonight's meeting. I had observations from Katie Moore to say the scope had appeared to have widened a little bit, so she wants to make sure that it's fit for purpose. So in conjunction with Councillor Monk, me and Katie will look again at that scoping document, and we hope to have it back at the next meeting. Also, I must say as well that Katie did say there other policies are being reviewed which may actually impact on that scoping document as well. So it's a little bit of a delay, but we hope to bring it back to the next meeting with that one. And so that was all I was going to mention on the scrutiny panels, but I know, Chair, you have a suggestion about.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up the, for everyone who was in the members' briefing, obviously it came up about having a scrutiny panel on flooding, obviously following the recent flooding that we've had. It was brought up by Nikki that there was one 10 years ago, and actually Councillor Harper Davies was the chair of the panel at the time. So we're looking at how we can introduce the scrutiny panel on flooding as quickly as possible. We think that would definitely be helpful for us to look back at what's happened, what things can be done better, so that we're in a better position, obviously, next time that happens. So the plan at the moment is to introduce a chair as soon as possible. I think Councillor Harper-Davies, I think you're volunteering yourself. Unless anybody else kind of wants to put themselves forward for that position, but we want to go ahead and get this done as soon as possible. So to get a volunteer tonight, I think is going to be really helpful. So if we're all in agreement, let's do that first, I think. Is everyone happy for Councillor Harper-Davies to chair that panel? Yeah, okay, that's that one done. So the plan for this is so that we can move this forward as quickly as possible. Councillor Harper-Davies and Karen are going to look at a scoping document as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. They will distribute that scoping document to us by email rather than waiting until the next meeting. Mm-hmm. They'll draft the scoping document, distribute that to all of us for us to give comments back, and then once we're happy with that, myself and Laurie as Vice Chair and Chair will approve that scoping document prior to the next meeting to allow us to get this
panel moving as quickly as possible. We'll then officially formalise that at the next meeting, mm-hmm. but it will allow them to actually get going on the panel rather than wait and then do it. Mm-hmm. I think the general view is the sooner we get working on this, the better, really. Is everyone okay with that as a provisional plan?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good.
Right, we'll be able to use the template that we used for the previous one.
Yes,
yeah, well, so we won't have to reinvent the
worm. No, I think we'd be rushing it out at 9 o'clock.
I thought the same, that's why I thought, I'll get ahead of the game here and offer.
Yeah. I think we're all grateful for that.
This template that we've, the one from, we can tweak it, but yeah. I actually think it's quite, it's still
it's really
very
fair, isn't it?
And it means as well that the recommendations from 10 years ago
yeah.
can actually be looked at as part of that. Have they, what's moved on since
revisiting
then,
that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so when the scoping document gets done, the recommendations will be looked at.
Yeah,
kind
we
of
can
a,
include that in there,
yeah.
see if that
yeah.
anything's changed and what else has
yeah.
changed. So
let me know some dates, Karen, tomorrow, whenever. And
yeah, I'm in a lot of training tomorrow, so you've probably got here
yeah.
to me.
Okay.
Given that there are certain areas that have been really badly damaged by flooding on this occasion, would it be wise or nice to ask whether those councillors in those areas should have some input as well, because they'll have practical experience of what happened.
I think there'll be two options, correct me if I'm wrong, Karen, here, but I think there'll be two options to do that. So one, we'll obviously be looking for people to sit on the panel. Mm. So there'll be, once the scoping document's done, there'll be an invitation out to invite members to,
oh, right,
to join that panel. So if anyone is really kind of passionate about it and wants to get involved and give their time, then that would be great. And obviously they can get involved that way. And then once the panel is set up, I would imagine that we'll be consulted for feedback. So I would imagine as part of the scoping document, as the panel gets going, they'll be looking for feedback from all different areas, residents, different organisations, etc. And I would hope that members would be included kind of in that consultation.
We could make it quite specific. I'm just looking at the key task. It says to obtain evidence from those affected by the flooding. So we could elaborate what actually we mean by that, so that it could be the parish councils. And could do a survey on the website, Facebook, to see, get feedback. Mm. You know, there's lots of ways of doing that. So we could maybe just expand what we mean by that.
Okay.
Can I just mention something that I sort of mentioned earlier, but is sort of relevant if we're doing the scoping document and such like, is that obviously we want things... to happen sooner rather than later, so we can explore them and then implement things. But people do tend to forget things after a little while. And I'm just thinking, particularly from the parishes' perspectives, when we ask them for sort of information, if we're doing a panel or something like that, very often, like, they won't want to send a response in until they've agreed it at the next parish council meeting.
Yes.
So is there any way to kind of... Are we able to ask them now, almost? Would you like to give us some of the thoughts on, you know, what happened last week as a parish, or do we have to wait until we've ratified
the
panel?
I feel a bit cautious. I can see what you mean, but I think we need to be a little bit cautious, because I think they're still a little bit in the aftermath of it at the moment, aren't they? So,
we could put an information out and saying we're thinking of doing.
We're hoping to
like a flag,
just
to say look out for this.
Yes.
So we could send communication out and say we are proceeding with a panel, a scrutiny panel on flooding, and
would
we'll
you
be looking for feedback from.
So at least, that's a good idea.
Just
because
that
they've got
could,
it in the line.
That
yeah.
go on the agenda
they, it
for
gives,
the parish
yeah,
council.
Yeah, that gives them a topic.
And then they can, if it goes on the agenda of the next parish council and they agree,
they have their discussion, then the feedback is ready
yes.
to come back
yeah.
to us when we want
it's
it.
Setting off that mechanism. We could do that.
Just as long as you get that on the parish council's agenda, then the clerk can then say, are we all right to go ahead with this?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody will say, yeah.
That's a really quick email. Those can go on for drag on, can't
you? But you need to explain that sort of thing when you write into the parish council.
Yeah.
We're doing this, we need a quick response, blah, blah, blah.
Because it's the case of, like, because I think lots of us are on parish councils or go to them, don't they? But say if somebody's got a parish council meeting this week or next week, that agenda's out.
Well, ours is tomorrow.
Exactly.
Yeah, so then, it would be the next
you've got
anyway.
Another 4 months.
You've got another four months
till they can make some sort of decision and then it comes back to us. And I'm just thinking it might just help keep things moving.
And generally, the clerks of the parishes, they won't answer anything, they wouldn't give the feedback without it having gone on an agenda item first and there being a discussion.
You could almost suggest that they
add this to an
agenda item.
Give it as a suggestion. Don't tell them to do it, but perhaps you could add this to your next meeting for a discussion to give us feedback.
Yeah,
something along those wording. They don't like to be told what to do.
Yes. Well, Mount Sorrels is the 15th, which is council day, but I'm happy to. I'll approach them if you like in the interim, because it's next Monday.
Because it would be nice. I mean, Thalmiston, Touchwood, limited. Bridge. Oh, just forget about Churchill Bridge. I mean, for goodness sake. Let's just forget about that. I'm going to close that road down. Although we've got a river going all the way through, it's not going through the middle like Syston is. And Syston was hit fairly
badly. Yeah, that was one of the significant.
So Thalmiston Parish wouldn't want any involvement.
Yeah, and Bursa wouldn't really necessarily. No. We didn't really have any issues.
Yeah, you're on a river, you know, and it's my daughter kept sending me photos of. It's coming up, it's nearly up to the end.
There was a warning that came through, but thankfully everything was
no property. Okay,
that's an action then that we send out an email just to
get that as well,
onto the agendas of the parish councils.
Yep. Yep.
Good.
Thank you.
And then we'll work together.
Yep. Okay, great.
But it's not going to, I don't think it's going to take too long.
It's going to make life easier, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's pretty much there.
Lovely. So item 10, budget scrutiny panel. So we've all got an agenda supplement. If Councillor Seaton wants to briefly introduce the report.
I haven't got the agenda supplement, but I'm not
printed. It's on your desk.
On
your desk.
It wasn't. Was it? No? I don't think there was. Just the papers I bought with them.
I've got a spare one.
Guys, you've just given me one. I've read it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm just going to read this out. I'll send it to you, unless he already has. No. Good evening, members. Please accept my apologies for not attending your meeting in person. I am at another meeting. In introducing this report, I would like to say that the Budget Scrutiny Panel must evaluate the information put before it in such a short space of time. I would like to thank all the members and officers for their input and commitment in scrutinising this budget. You will see from our comments that Charnwood has financial challenges but is overall in a strong position to take these on, and I would therefore recommend this report to you. And this is from Chair Mark Charles. Thank you.
Thank you. Has anyone got any questions or comments in relation to the report?
I think, Chair, if I may, I think it's more pleasing to be in a far better financial position than we envisaged that we were going to be in. So I think that's really good.
Yeah, I think there's been some
relief.
Yeah,
so Tom could rest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think the interest rates has really helped.
It's helped us, whereas with lots of other people, obviously, that's gone sort of been a detriment. But actually, for us, it's been a bit of a godsend, really. Has anyone got anything else that they want to raise?
Just say thank you for the report.
Yeah, thank you for the panel.
Yeah, it was quite
the time that's gone into it.
It would be pages and pages longer than it was.
No.
Happy
with that one. Thank you. Item 11, we've got an update on the Waste Management Scrutiny Panel. We've got Matt Bradford back with us. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, do you want to introduce the report?
Yes, please. The report looks at three of the actions that were approved by Cabinet
last December and provides an update. Would you like me to go through those one by one, Sharon?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so the first action is number 5, and that was to promote partner agencies, local groups, businesses and organisations working to reduce waste. So it looks at repair cafes and zero waste shops and other things. I'd say that the progress on this one hasn't been as I would have hoped, and the reason for that is that I've been an officer down on the team for about 12 months, so I've had to put some of the more added value work, discretionary work, on the back burner, but that officer has now returned to work, and I hope to pick that up and get that resolved within the next 6 months. Does anyone have any questions on that action before I move on to the next one?
Anything?
No.
No, thanks, Matt.
Again, this action looked at doing some more recycling comms work that we do. We do regular social media posts on recycling, what goes in what bin. But some of the face-to-face work has again been put on the back burner, and some of the more sort of creative ways of promoting good waste practices, I would say. Look, there was a hope that we'd get a sort of zero waste family to work with us for a year and try and produce as little residual waste as possible, and we could do a lot of comms focused around that one family. Unfortunately, again, that hasn't happened due to officer shortages, so we're looking to pick that up again within the next 6 months and work with that and to try and get those comms moving.
I'd love to be that family.
Councillor Seaton, we are looking for a volunteer. So
I've got nappies and everything that come into this, so because there's children, there's babies and teenagers that aren't teenagers, they're 30-year-olds that don't think that they can recycle anything if it means them putting their hand in the McDonald's bag and taking the little tomato sauce thing out. They think that if we just crunch the bag, nobody will notice the tomato sauce thing, and that means we can recycle all of it. So I actually have to go through the green bin and undo things and tut while I'm doing it. I'm very good at tutting.
Well, through the chair, if we're looking for a councillor volunteer to work alongside us, your name's in the frame, Councillor Seaton.
Okay, that's fine.
Note that one down, Sally.
Put it in the minutes. That's it then.
And the last one, Chair, was item 9, and that was to look at the establishment of a scrap store and a library of things to be available to the community. This wasn't a council-led initiative. We're looking to work with a voluntary sector organisation to lend items to residents, items that don't really have frequent usage, so someone might want to borrow a sewing machine or a hedge trimmer or something like that. And this library of things rents out those items and then gets them back. So to date, that community project hasn't got off the ground, but there is a group actively looking at it at the moment. They are trying to find premises, and I am in regular contact with them. So I hope that this can move forward, but it's not something that's under our direct control, unfortunately.
Thanks, Matt. I just got a question on parish councils within that. Is it worth us sending out communication to parish councils, kind of giving them the idea that that's something that potentially they could do within the community, and that we would look to support them if they wanted to?
We could do. We could perhaps liaise at the next parish liaison meeting, or send some written communication out, because I think the group that's looking at this is based in Loughborough, and
guessing it might be, and that was going to be my concern. It's something that you want to be able to nip somewhere locally, and somebody who's in Birstall or Anstey or probably Thurmaston isn't going to go to Loughborough to borrow something and then come back again. It's something that you want in quite a local situation to where you are, it might be.
But really, it's got to be a big organisation to do it, because how do you stand if somebody wants a strimmer and there's an electrical fault on it and it electrocutes somebody? Has it got to be
pat-tastic? It'd have to be pat-tastic, yeah. Wouldn't it? Even like electrical
Singer Show Machine. I mean, we do have a WhatsApp group for that was set up COVID, and we still actually, every now and again, somebody, have you got a sewing machine? That was your thing. And has anybody got any curtains at such and such a size? So we have that's very localised to three streets for mine anyway. But I can see it. It's I wouldn't like to manage something like that. It would be lots of risky. Lots of messy. Lots of
there's always a few that are in it for everybody, isn't it?
Through you, Chair, there are quite a few groups that do this now up and down the country. It's quite well established in some places, but obviously a lot of the items are electrical. They do have to be regularly tested, the group would have to be properly insured and things like that to make sure there were no personal liabilities on the volunteers. So it is quite tricky.
Well, let's see how it progresses with the Loughborough group, and
I was going to say that because it's a pilot example.
What other places through your chair have got it? Is it something that we could look at on the internet? What other places?
There are quite a lot of places that do this in the south of the country, Councillor Seaton. I think it started in London, really.
Right.
Now, they work on a locker basis. So they started with volunteers and having sort of centres that were operated by people, and they found that didn't work. They created something like an Amazon locker that you get now. When you borrow something, and I think you pay a small fee, you get a code and go to the locker, and it unlocks when you put the code in. You take the item away. So that's one model. But the group that I'm in conversation with at the moment, they want to do more of a face-to-face type service. So that's the way that it will work. But there are quite a lot of groups in existence now.
Thank you. Any other questions before we close that off?
No.
Yeah,
I have one small question, which is not technically related to this, but is it all right if I just quickly ask Matt while he's here?
Yeah.
Thank you. Matt, hope you don't mind me asking. I saw with great interest, because you know I love waste management, that Hinckley have introduced those big black bins
that you can rent.
Have you seen those? And is there anything that Charnwood might be thinking along doing those lines as well? Because I imagine they'd be quite good at sort of like
a
source of income as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm referring to,
Matt? No, is that where you can have a big bin for a week?
Yeah.
So it's like and just short of a skip.
It's still household waste that has to go in it, but they've got two sizes, both significantly larger than your normal black bin, and it was like a £50 charge or a £60 charge for a week.
It was like a biffer bin, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it was just like that. Yes. Yeah, exactly like that.
It did look quite interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm happy to take that away and speak to my counterpart at Hinckley to see how that's going and how they're finding that's working, and report back to you to let you know how that's going.
Yeah, they launched it at Christmas, and they were saying if you've got loads and loads of additional Christmas waste, it was like a good thing to do.
Yeah.
But they're doing it all year round, I believe.
Yeah, I think they are, aren't they? And they're keeping it. And I just saw it and I just thought, it's a very good idea.
It caught my attention. Yeah,
particularly things like Christmas when we know we've got extra. And I also wondered if it, say we were to do something similar, if it might help to a certain extent with some of the issues when students move house, and if we could sort of encourage landlords to perhaps get them for that period when students are changing in Loughborough. Because that was one of the issues that came up, wasn't it, on that original panel? Yeah.
Yes, it's something that we could look into, and I'm happy to report back on that. I think we report back every 6 months on these recommendations anyway.
Yeah.
So that I could bring something back with the next report of this type to let you know what I found, or I can come back sooner if you like on that. It's
they might need it because it's only just launched, hasn't it? So it 6 months at least, they might have some learnings from it from that point.
Yeah, but I just sort of wanted to sort of flag it up because I just thought it looked like such a good idea. It might be something that we could explore, but yeah, however it works for you, Matt, that's fine. But yeah, I just thought I'd mention that one.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a good idea.
Okay. I'll bring that back with the next report on the scrutiny panel actions, if that's okay, Chair.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks, Matt. Okay. I think that's the end of that one. Thanks, Matt. I think that's your last item, isn't it?
It is. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, so we've got item 11 now, so scrutiny work programme.
So, item 12, yes.
12. Yeah.
So this is to review the finance and performance scrutiny work programme, and I have no suggestions to put forward. Do any of the members have any suggestions?
No, I just made a little note for myself to check about the, what you mentioned, Councillor Davis, about the corporate delivery plan.
So that's the finance and work and performance work programme, so that's noted. And then if you don't mind, I'll go
carry
straight
on
to item 13, which is a scrutiny commission work programme. And I've looked through this earlier just to make sure that I've looked at the key decisions list to see, and they all match up. You've got items already on the key decisions, so there's nothing that I can see that you might want to add to that. And in response to Councillor Needham, the update on I can't see it actually.
I thought I had seen it. Sorry, I jumped the gun, didn't I? Ahead of myself.
But the delivery plan. Oh, you might be. I know what you mean. If it's not on there, you want it adding in.
I've
just found it. Page
94.
Yeah.
Pages time. 94.
Well,
I've just found it.
I've no idea. Corporate delivery plan, and it's due to go to Cabinet in March, so you've already got that on there. So that's not classed as a. I don't think it's on a key decision list. That's probably why I've not pulled it together. I've got no suggestions to make. Any of the members have
not found anything different than we've already got. Anyone else catch a seat? Any of you?
No, nothing.
So that's noted then.
Lovely.
Thank you. I think we've went through it quite well last year.
Yeah, I think that's where we've picked everything up, isn't it? That's it. Meeting closed.
Thank you.
Next meeting is the 5th of February. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you,
Sally. Thank you, Karen.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.